Joining us on the line now is Jane Bulware. She's a global business leader and former Microsoft executive. She's got a fascinating backstory and she's written her book, Worthy, to inspire others to act with courage and resilience to overcome limitations and succeed despite being told what they can't, won't and shouldn't do. Welcome to the show, Jane.
Oh, thanks for having me, Hannah. I'm happy to be here.
Oh, it's lovely to have you with us. Thank you for joining us. So tell people about your journey then. You were born in Iowa and had an interesting childhood.
Yeah, I was born in a rural farming community. And I was the fourth kid born in a one-bedroom house. So I was one of five kids, and we didn't have a lot of resources. So we learned from an early age to kind of fend for ourselves and to be resilient, to work hard, to get along well with other people. But truthfully, there were no expectations that I do anything with my life other than stay on the good side of the church and the law, in that order. So truly, didn't really see the world beyond my small town until, gosh, I was in my teens before I saw a big, a town of 100,000 people, or 25 before I saw the ocean. It literally was up to kind of other people to encourage me and for me to overcome some of those limitations to forge a life that was different than what I had.
That's amazing. I'm just picking up on the 25 before you saw the ocean. That's incredible. So obviously Iowa's an inland state. You weren't near the ocean. So, I mean, is that normal? Does that happen a lot for people born in kind of central area of America?
It doesn't anymore. I'm a little older. Yes, I do think that there are many people that are born and stay within the community in which they were raised and are very happy there. That doesn't mean they don't see the ocean. It doesn't mean they don't travel. But remember, when I grew up, it was, I grew up in a family that didn't really, my parents didn't really want to look outside of our community at that time. Mm-hmm. And so, to have expectations for life beyond there really wasn't anything we talked about. It wasn't said that I couldn't do it. It was more of a, gosh, why would you? Or what even is there? Because there was very much of an expectation that you kind of do what your parents did before you. Yeah. I mean, I married a man who was my grandmother and his grandmother were friends. My mom and his mother had sleepovers at each other's home. And I was friends with his older sister. So it seemed destiny that I would marry the man from my hometown and remain there. And I don't think anyone, including myself, would have known that I would have worked internationally, managed one of the largest mergers in the history of the United States, and ultimately been one of the top executives at Microsoft, because I didn't know that kind of world existed.
Yeah, amazing. And you did actually marry your childhood sweetheart, didn't you?
Still am, 40 years ago.
Oh, that's lovely. Lovely. So how did you get into business then? How did you escape this small town and start making things happen for you?
I think it was when I was about 9 years old and I was mowing lawns, and I realized it was better and easier to have the boys in the neighborhood mow the lawns while I got the job and collected the money. So you could argue
love it.
Some ways my first job was before I was in third grade. I just naturally really love business. I love making things grow, whether they are people or businesses or products that meet the needs of other people. I really genuinely enjoy it. But I'll tell you, I went to college for a degree in forestry because a gnarly old nun suggested that A, I go to college, B, I go to college in forestry, and C, helped me get a small scholarship, which proved that maybe, just maybe, I was college material. And to be sure, I got a degree in forestry, and there was not a single forest in all within 300 miles of where I was raised, and I had never seen a forest. But that's what I went to school for.
Gosh, and how has that helped you in your life?
It's helped me, believe it or not, very much. Because
oh, really?
Oh my gosh, I am so grateful for that degree because it was so different than what I had done and the people were so different that in order for me to be successful, I had to learn to adapt. I had to learn to get along with other people and see things from a totally different lens. And in the forestry, I learned, not all trees are trees. I had to look really closely to identify different trees by their leaves, by their shape, by their bark, by their Latin name. And it taught me that not all people are the same. Sometimes you have to look really closely to see what's really, really cool and unique about a person. And so, yeah, I learned quite a bit in forestry.
Oh, interesting. And tell us about your time at Microsoft then. How did you get in there, first of all? What was your first job?
Well, out of college, I went to work for a company called Kimberly-Clark. And Kimberly-Clark makes products everybody known around the world, like Huggies, Kleenex, and Kotex, and Scott Paper, et cetera. And I did that, and I worked my way up from entry level all the way to the head of marketing there. And by the time I was 40, there was no further place for me to ascend. I was fat, dumb, and happy. And my husband and I always agreed we'd never be fat, dumb, and happy. because we never wanted to be too comfortable. That was kind of my thing. I wanted to continue to stretch and grow. And so initially when Microsoft came knocking, we said, no, we're happy in Wisconsin. We're happy living, 8 hours from where we grew up. It's comfortable. We have a good life. But eventually they kept coming at me because I was known as a good marketer nationally and internationally. And I said yes, and it started an entirely new adventure, some of which was positive and some of which went terribly, terribly left of what I expected.
Yeah. I mean, everybody knows Microsoft for lots of different reasons. It's one of the biggest companies in the world, it seems. What was it like to work there? What was the office environment like?
Keep in mind, things have changed under the new CEO, but under the old CEO, the Bill Gates and Steve Ballmer era, it was a very, very competitive place. They took pride in the saying that they ate their young. So if you came from outside of Microsoft, it was as if they dunked you in chocolate and fed you to the wolves. So I learned very quickly that it was a different culture. It was certainly different products. And it was a different way that I needed to lead and manage. And it took me, truthfully, it took me a couple of years and me trying to get my footing before I realized I needed to go into a different place in Microsoft where I could lead and manage the way that was true to who I was. And in the process of doing that, I went from being really failing, struggling to get traction, to being and creating and managing teams that blew away all expectations.
Yeah.
I think the message there is you have to be able to, if you're in an environment that's toxic or that's not very good at the time, you have to either find a place where you can be authentic and be true to yourself and build the business and make that happen. Or you have to, you can adapt, you can change, but you have to determine how far and how well you can do that before you make a major decision. And a number of the people that joined the year that I joined, there were a number of other executives from outside that joined with me. Very few of them stayed beyond a year or two.
Gosh. And did you feel like you were in the minority as a woman? Did it feel like a kind of man's world that you were in? Was that an issue or not?
It didn't feel that way. It was that way. Absolutely. I was one of the top 150 executives at Microsoft, which, remember, this is an organization at the time of, I think, 75,000 employees. So it was a pretty, pretty good position. And there were, I believe, about a dozen women at that time, not very many of us. And more importantly, technology, particularly in that time, but it's still true, is very much of a man's culture. Men dominate, or certainly did at that time. There were no women leading technology companies at that time. So it was, in fact, the combination of being a woman, being an outsider, being someone whose background was in marketing consumer packaged goods. I had created $2 billion businesses and led $2 billion businesses before I joined Microsoft. And at that time, it wasn't relevant because it wasn't technology. So, yes, I do think being a woman would have helped me probably get along better and make better connections than I did. But I think there were many things at that time, which was true of many people, that made it difficult to be successful at Microsoft.
Yeah. Did you feel like you had
changed?
Sorry, say that again.
I said, I believe, fortunately, that has changed in a pretty significant way.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's good. Have you felt throughout, not just at Microsoft, but in other stages of your career, that you've had to kind of prove yourself more because you're a woman?
I think that there is or certainly there was, natural connections that men had at the time when I was, particularly when I was working my way up, that as a woman, you didn't naturally fit in. I didn't play golf. I didn't belong to the men's league. I didn't, I learned all those things. I learned golf. I learned sports. I learned all the things to help me make that connective tissue. And yet there were so few other women that one of the things that I was unable to do is have role models, have mentors, have sponsors that were women that could guide me a little bit on and coach me on the things to do, the things to avoid, and the things to really focus on. And that's why I believe so strongly now I've spent a lot of time doing mentoring to provide that learning, that experience, that guidance to other people, other women in particular that are working their way up the corporate ladder.
Yeah. One of the statements that you give, that you talk about in the book, that you've been hit on, spit on, shot at, it goes on, but just those three things I wanted to ask you about. You were shot at? When did that happen?
I worked for a while in our Latin American operations, and some of the countries that I managed were dangerous, truthfully. In particular, one of the bosses that I went with was a very prominent person, and we always drove in armored cars. You weren't allowed to get out of the car until the person, the security detail, had their gun drawn, which was okay because in an armored car, the doors were so heavy, the vehicles were so heavy, being bulletproof, that I couldn't open the door by myself anyway. Honestly, if people would have gotten shot, I would have just stuck in the car and not been able to get out no matter what. So there was a situation in particular when I was in Sao Paulo, Brazil, and I was in a place where I ought not have been, and I was without a security detail, and I ventured into a scenario that I ought not to have been, and I got out of there as quickly as I could, but it was definitely scary, very scary. I've seen people get this was a couple decades ago. I was in my taxi and I saw a person probably 10 feet from me get stabbed. I was in a scenario at that point where I was definitely learning, stretching, et cetera, with maybe the, let's just say that I learned a lot from business and I learned a lot about life. Yeah. And appreciation of the life I have now, that's for certain.
Yeah. And it's interesting to imagine how things seem to change so quickly from one moment to the next. You know, you talk about being called a bulldog, a bitch, brilliant and inspiring all in the same week.
It's true.
Sounds like a lot.
It used to bother me so much to be called a bitch. And I used to think there was something wrong with me because I was afraid so much. I felt like that I didn't want anyone else to see how scared I was on the inside. So I put up this bravado, right? And I didn't want to show that I didn't know what was going on. And it took years of me going through that and figuring and going through experiences that weren't healthy and how I managed my fear and my anxiety before I realized that I was afraid because I was putting myself in situations where I was new. I'd never experienced this before. I was growing and I was lucky to be in that scenario. So when I put myself in fear and I feel myself being afraid now, I ask myself, am I afraid because I'm in danger? Or am I afraid because I'm trying something new and different and growing and stretching? And it's always the latter. I haven't been shot at for a very long time. And so that's okay. I realized that in doing difficult things I never imagined, I began to imagine myself differently. And I liked that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, women have a reputation, but sometimes, let's say, add the word sometimes in there, sometimes have a reputation of being emotional in business, and that can be a negative thing. How were you able to, deal with all this criticism and not be emotional about it, to let it not bother you?
Oh, it did bother me. I'm human, obviously. I'm not a crier. I grew up in a household where crying really didn't do much. It wasn't a very nurturing environment. So I learned pretty young how to take care of myself in difficult situations. But I also learned to ask myself, am I doing my best? Truly, am I doing my best? And when I know that I'm doing my best and someone criticizes me, my choice is to take it personally and fall apart, or to say, okay, I don't know the answers. I've never done this before. And to give myself that space for grace and just take it for what it is. And sometimes it fits and sometimes it doesn't fit. But it's not about the person I am inside, because I know my core is really solid. My core is really strong. I know who I am. I've been tested by fire many times. And so when I receive criticism, I'm able to discern what's valid and what's not valid. If you want to call me a bitch, I choose to believe it's because I'm strong and I'm loyal and I stand up for people and I stand up for perspectives and I'm not going to flinch or wilt at criticism. That doesn't mean I'm not going to accept that I'm wrong. It doesn't mean I won't change directions. It just means that that's a label that I choose not to wear in a negative way.
Yeah.
I look, you know, someone can put a crown on your head and label you however they want, but it's up to you to wear it. And I choose not to wear that crown or that label.
Mm. And tell us a bit more about the inspiration behind writing this book and why you've called it Worthy.
Geez, that's a good question, Hannah. Notice I didn't write the book and call it Jane. Look how far she came from the cornfields of Iowa to the corner office of Microsoft. I wrote the book and I called it Unworthy. It's actually the UN is crossed off. The un is crossed off in front of the worthy. And the reason for that, Hannah, is because the book is as much about undoing the uns as it is about feeling worthy. So I felt unsure, unworthy, unable, unconfident, unpowerful sometimes. And even if I had people that enabled me, empowered me, encouraged me, if I didn't undo my own uns, I couldn't advance. Personally, I couldn't advance professionally. And so I wrote the book to provide very real stories of overcoming the times when I was afraid, the times when people told me what I couldn't, shouldn't, and wouldn't do, overcoming the limitations, in the hopes that other people would feel inspired or feel encouraged to go beyond their own fears and achieve what their dreams are. And maybe, just maybe, rethinking what's possible.
Yeah. Oh, it's a great message. And I know that you're donating 100% of the book proceeds to Boys and Girls Clubs. What are Boys and Girls Clubs?
Boys and Girls Club is the largest youth organization in the United States, and I actually think global. It is a place kids can go after school where they receive, it's a place they go after school where they receive help with homework. They can participate in athletics. They can have a meal or a snack. They're surrounded by adults who support, encourage them, and give them hope for a different or better tomorrow and help them be the best kids they can be. It's for kids of all backgrounds, all age, you know, school age children, from, well, rich to not rich, from those who have means to those who don't. And the reason I selected Boys and Girls Club is because when I was growing up, I didn't have a lot of resources. I didn't have people that believed in me or encouraged me or even exposed me to things beyond my community until I was in high school. And when that happened, it changed my life. And I want to provide scholarships for kids that are at the Boys and Girls Club so that they can have an opportunity at a life they maybe don't know exists.
Oh, that's wonderful. Fantastic. No, I hadn't heard of Boys and Girls Clubs. I don't know if they're if we have them in Europe, if it's called that specific name or not. I don't know. It's obviously a big thing in America then.
There are 5,000 clubs in the United States.
Wow. Yeah. Fantastic.
It's fantastic. And sometimes they're just part of schools. Sometimes they're separate clubhouses. Excuse me. But they are safe places where kids can go and get nourished physically, emotionally, and set the course for our future.
Yeah. Wonderful. Well, it's been great to chat with you. Thank you so much for joining us, Jane Bulwer. If people want to get a copy of your book, it's called Worthy, From Cornfields to Corner Office of Microsoft. It's available on our website, tre.radio. Jane, thank you so much.
Thank you, Hannah, for having me on your show. I really appreciate it.